Good afternoon, this is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. The North Douglas boat launch will soon reopen to the public after being closed for more than 2 weeks due to damage to its parking lot. In mid-January, Juneau's Docks and Harbor staff closed off a portion of the launch's parking lot on North Douglas Highway that provides access to the boat ramp. That's after they discovered a large sinkhole that developed near the entrance. Matt Cresswell, Juneau's harbor master, says the closure was made out of an abundance of caution.
Luckily, this did happen in January instead of in the middle of the busy summer boating season. The use is fairly minimal out at North Douglas. However, there are some diehards that are out there quite often, and it's used as a cabin access point as well.
Sunny Mauricio, a spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Transportation, says the damage was likely caused by erosion to a culvert pipe that runs beneath the highway, which the state maintains. The state is handling the sinkhole repairs. He says the department plans to temporarily repair the damage and reopen the launch to the public by the end of this week. He says it's still unclear how extensive the damage is to the area.
We plan on going out this week to cover it with big metal plates that will stay there until the spring allows us to go out and do some more permanent repairs.
Mauricio says the department will share details about a more permanent fix in the coming months. And a quick look at weather today in Juneau, it is 39 degrees out. This afternoon, rain is likely and it will be cloudy with a high near 42 degrees. Tonight, rain mainly after midnight. Tomorrow, also rain with a high near 45 degrees. This is KTOO. Thank you so much for tuning in. Good afternoon, this is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. As the city's emergency programs manager, Ryan O'Shaughnessy leads emergency planning, response, and recovery for the city and borough of Juneau. KTOO's Mike Lane recently caught up with O'Shaughnessy to talk about lessons learned from the major storm events in December and January and how the department operates.
Ryan, what is your vision for CBJ's emergency management department, and how do these new roles, avalanche advisor and tech, fit into that vision?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. My vision for CBJ's emergency programs is really one of whole community engagement. Our team really relies on strong partnerships with all kinds of different agencies for avalanche specifically, as well as for, you know, the flooding we experience in the summertime and any other hazard that we may face. You know, Juneau's an islanded community, and it really takes all of us, the public, our government agencies, our nonprofits, our private sector, to participate in emergency management.
Right. Okay. Do you think you'll be hiring for more roles in your department soon, like geohazard or landslide specialist, climate adaptation specialist, et cetera?
Those are great questions, Mike. And I can't speak for the assembly on the allocation of funding for our division. But, you know, we have a lot of work cut out for us. There's no shortage of hazards in our community. Our hazard mitigation plan sites many hazards, ranging from everything from downtown fire to tsunami and earthquake, glacial lake outburst flooding, regular flooding. So there's no shortage of hazards. And, you know, we have identified in our hazard mitigation plan a lot of actions that we can take to mitigate those. But those do come with, you know, staff requirements. So,
of course. How do you see this past disaster declaration went? How do you think it all unfolded? Was it organized? Was it chaos? What was it?
Organized chaos.
It was both. Is where we
like to live. You know, the practice of emergency management is taking those emergency scenarios and trying to bring some order to them.
Okay.
So, you know, I think we accomplished the objectives that we set out with, which, you know, as always, we're going to prioritize preservation and of life safety for the public and protecting critical infrastructure. So always learning, right? There's always things that we can do better, and we are continuing to reflect on this most recent event with our partners and internally, and try to enact some lessons learned.
Excellent. Speaking of lessons learned, what did you see in this last episode of disasters that you're now reevaluating how you're going to do it later? Was there something that you went, oh, we got to change this?
Yeah, I think there's lots of stuff. Yeah. A lot of takeaways specific to avalanche, but you know, we're constantly looking for those things in emergency management, right? We are preparing, we're training, we're preparing, we're executing and responding to disasters, and then the next phase of that cycle is to reflect and evaluate. Based on that evaluation, we train and we plan. And you know, this disaster specifically, I think one of the core challenges was it affected everything about our community. You know, a lot of times when we see stuff like the flooding in the summer is a great example. It's localized to an area, whereas this disaster, it literally blanketed our community. People were tired. Both of the people affected by it, the people working to respond to it, were tired from shoveling at their own homes. Everybody was exhausted. It impacted travel and the facilities we were able to use. So it was a challenging one, and some unique and interesting lessons being learned for sure.
Is there anything you'd like to add to this?
I never miss an opportunity to plug emergency alerts. Signing up for emergency alerts is absolutely the best way to stay informed and up to date on anything going on related to this hazard and other hazards in our community.
How would one do that?
The easiest way to sign up for emergency alerts is to text CBJ to the number 38276.
38276.
Yep, and you just type and in the message, just send CBJ, and that'll sign you up for emergency alerts.
Awesome.
Alternatively, you can go to the CBJ website. Right there on the homepage, there's a button that'll get you signed up.
That was Ryan O'Shaughnessy, the city's emergency programs manager, talking with KTOO's Mike Lane. And the U.S. Forest Service is moving forward with a plan to harvest more than 5,000 acres of trees in the Tongass National Forest, just east of Ketchikan. A majority of that is going to be old-growth trees, which some people worry will be devastating to the forest. KRBD's Sydney Dauphiné reports.
The Forest Service released the final environmental impact statement for the South Revilla project earlier this month. The project site, which surrounds Carroll Inlet on both sides, is around 41,000 acres in total. It would allow for the harvest of over 4,000 acres of old-growth timber and over 1,000 acres of young-growth timber. Kathy Tai, a district ranger with the Forest Service, says the clear cut will allow for more than logging. It will also create new recreation opportunities.
So it's not just focused on timber. It actually clears a lot of activities that help us meet our multiple use mandate as an agency.
The project includes construction of new trails, a cabin, boat launches, and outhouses. It also includes the construction of parking spaces and 14 miles of new road. Environmental groups have been pushing back on large-scale old-growth logging for decades. For years, up until Trump was reelected, the Forest Service was steering away from large-scale old-growth logging. The focus was instead on young-growth sales, which has less of a negative cultural and environmental impact. The Ketchikan area plans were originally introduced in 2016 under the first Trump administration, but were shelved in 2020 with a change in administration and a temporary hold put on projects. But with another administration change came a new executive order and new direction from the Department of Agriculture to restart and increase timber production.
Since this project was so close to being completed previously, you know, we had all of our resource specialists review those changes and sort of pick up where we left off.
Part of developing the plan involves an interdisciplinary review, where resource specialists with the federal agency study the site and evaluate risks.
It's a long process, partly because we have all of these different resources working together. And then in addition, there's a lot of what we call best management practices that go into, you know, how far away from a stream you have to like fuel equipment, you know, to protect resources.
But critics say that old growth logging projects of this scale will be devastating. Betsy Burdett is the owner of Southeast Exposure Outdoor Adventure Center, a kayaking and ziplining tour company in Ketchikan. She says she's seen logging projects of this size before, but she doesn't see it as responsible development.
It's just a question of how many people can this land support? I mean, in a healthy way, as we take care of our waters and our forests and so on, what's the breaking point and how can we do it responsibly?
She says she's seen people leave the island because they didn't like what was happening to the forests in the height of the timber industry. Nathan Newcomer from the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says there are better ways to go about logging.
I mean, our organization works with small mill operators that are just like mom and pop shops, really like two people that work there. And they might go grab one or two old growth trees every once in a while, or a tribe, for example. They might want to go chop down one old growth tree to build a canoe or carve a totem pole. Like, there's appropriate ways to do this.
He says the project will harm animal populations like those native to the Tongass and the region's world-class salmon runs. Old growth projects affect carbon sequestration and long-standing ecosystems. Newcomer says the South Revilla project will affect Southeast Alaskans who live a subsistence lifestyle, and it will come at a cost to taxpayers who will likely have to pay for a lot of the project.
The average person in Alaska understands that that's not our economy. It's not based on large-scale timber production. It might have been at one point decades ago, but we've moved on. And so to go back to that, again, I ask the question, who's asking for this? Who's getting the benefit out of this? It certainly isn't the majority of Alaskans in the Southeast.
Newcomer suspects this project might be a bellwether for other large-scale old-growth projects to come in Southeast, particularly if important conservation laws get repealed. There's a 45-day objection period that follows the release of the final environmental impact statement. That ends on March 8th. The final environmental impact statement can be found on the Forest Service website. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Sydney Dauphiné.
And I'm Clarice Larson. You're listening to KTOL.